Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, a science writer at HowStuffWorks.com.
And today's podcast, we're talking about maggots. All right, maybe you listened to our last podcast. We're kind of on a roll with perhaps animals that people consider not so attractive.
Yeah.
Might be grossed out by.
Yeah, we were going to do one podcast about both maggots and leeches, but each bloodsucker... No, they're not both bloodsuckers, but each creature turned out to be interesting enough in its own right to deserve its own podcast.
Right. And maggots, I have to say, I've softened a little bit toward maggots just because they are so vital. You know what it was? It was the podcast we did on composting, which was one of my favorite ones that we've done so far. And it's just a realization that they're necessary. And okay, so I can prove to you that my attitude has changed toward maggots because in fact we had a trash incident.
Oh yeah. You had some maggots at the house?
We keep our trash outside. There was a period where, unfortunately, the trash did not get to go out. And, you know, some stuff was born in that short time span. And I, unfortunately, opened the lid to the trash can. And, of course, I saw all of the maggots. It was a little bit traumatic, but it wasn't as traumatic had it been, you know, before the composting podcast,
yeah.
I think.
I don't know if I was ever really grossed out by, like, you know, as a kid, you know, I kind of lived in the country. And we would, you know,
ate maggots?
No, but there would be like dead animals and you'd see something crawling around in it. And, you know, it was what it was.
Cycle of life.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, I guess having watched a fair amount of horror, like occasionally maggots will show up. But the most amusing thing is that like sometimes like really cheap productions, they couldn't actually get maggots, I guess, which seems like.
How is that possible?
I don't know. It seems like, yeah, just think ahead and put some meat out, you know, and then pick them out with tweezers, right? But I don't know, it's like they will get some other type of worm to pretend to be maggots. So like, if you've ever seen maggots, you're like, those aren't maggots. Those are like, there's some sort of earthworm or something, you know? And then they'll use like a sound effect for the worm to make it sound like they're yelling or something. I don't know. At any rate, you know.
We're talking about maggot therapy.
Yeah,
today.
Maggot therapy
Let's
is what we're going to talk about.
Let's get on track. Yeah. And you know, in a world where public image counts a lot, maggot therapy is one therapy that really suffered a fall, but it's starting to come back in triumph.
Yeah. Though it still doesn't sound good. Like I think they need a snazzier name for it.
Well, there are. I think some people call it larval therapy.
See, that sounds a lot better.
There's a more technical name. I think maggot debridement therapy. Debriding just meaning the removal of dead tissue.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think that's such a good seller.
Yeah, because it's still got maggot in the title.
Right. You got to get rid of the maggot in the title if you want to do an elevator pitch and sell your therapy to some million-dollar venture capitalist. So anyway, back in the 1940s, when antibiotics first came onto the medicinal scene, maggots, you know, that's really when they fell out of favor. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's going to want, you know, a grub, a larval fly to be, you know, investigating your wounds when you could just pop an antibiotic?
Yeah.
And so they're back now, and they're hungry. So, okay, what's a maggot again? You guys know this, but for the sake of it, we'll just go over it real fast. It's, you know, a soft-bodied, legless grub. It's the larva of a Dipterus insect. In other words, it's a fly larva. It's an immature fly. Okay, here's something that I came across. And there's all some sorts of good stuff that we come across while we're researching this podcast, and we give as much of that research as we can to you guys. But the second definition of maggot is a fantastic or eccentric idea.
Huh. I've never heard of that either. But I like the idea of using it more, like, you know, like we'll come up to, you know.
Our editor-in-chief.
Yeah, we'll be like, hey, Connell, I got a real maggot here for you, but what do you say we do an entire article about, you know, something.
I think he would totally roll with it.
Yeah.
So what are maggots used for in maggot therapy? Well, as it turns out, we have a pretty good article on this written by freelancer Tom Shev. And mainly it's cleaning wounds.
It's kind of like they like to eat really gross flesh stuff. And so if you're in a situation where you're like, hey, what are we going to do with this gross fleshy stuff we need removed? Hey, you guys want to eat it? Hop on, you know?
Well, in particular, they have a predilection for dead tissue.
Yeah.
They're really good at removing dead tissue.
And unless things get out of hand, like they're pretty good about like just eat the dead tissue.
Just sticking to the dead tissue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of wound?
You couldn't trust like a buzzard with that, you know?
Heck no.
Like, hey guys, just pick at the rotten stuff, but leave the rest of the leg alone. And they'd be like, oh yeah, sure.
So, in particular, they come in handy. Maggot therapy comes in handy for traumatic or post-surgical wounds that just won't heal. But important note to doctors here considering this, I was reading that wounds with tunnels or kind of hiding spots for the maggots aren't necessarily good candidates for this particular kind of therapy.
Also, important note to doctors, if you're listening to our podcast and using that to decide how you're going to treat your patients, just really reconsider how you're going about things.
Also interesting was I found that there was a very small study. Participants were numbered 13 in all. And I found that people with MRSA contaminated wounds were cured using nothing but maggots.
Right.
Okay, and MRSA, of course, is a type of infection that's resistant to certain antibiotics. So that would be, you know, a big deal, especially when...
This is like when somebody gets like an antibiotic-resistant staph infection type of thing going on.
Yes, yeah, yes. Okay. Yeah, that is exactly what MRSA is. So it would prove handy in that case. And a lot of times maggot therapy is going to come in handy when you have stuff like ulcers. And oddly enough, these ulcers mainly are located on your lower extremities.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one called a venous stasis ulcer.
Now, this is the one, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like if I'm standing in one place for a while and I feel like I need to shift and move around, it might be because I had too much coffee, but it could be because like my body's telling me to move around.
That's the neuropathic foot ulcer, and we will get to that in a second. That's nerve damage. So the venous stasis ulcer is, you're going to find these below the knee, especially in the niche, that tiny little cute niche just above the ankle. And they're common in patients who have medical charts filled with stuff like leg swelling and varicose veins or, you know, a history of blood clots in the leg veins. You were jumping the gun, but yes, indeed, the neuropathic foot ulcer is also a candidate for maggot therapy. And for the love of God, I know you will, but don't look these up in Google Images. That was a tough one. It stuck with me. It seared in my brain, the neuropathic foot ulcer that I
saw. If you have one of these, by all means, take a picture of it and send it to us.
Like
somebody did
Robert
with their feet. Feline hookworms that the person sent us a photo of?
Canine hookworms.
Canine hookworms.
Yeah.
Human feet.
I can still picture it. That was a cool picture.
I can still see it too. It's burned into my mind.
So these neuropathic foot ulcers, like you can probably guess, these occur due to nerve damage. And like Robert was getting at, having intact nerves is a pretty handy thing. We all like having intact nerves. You know, it helps us tell you when to shift position if you're standing on your feet. Mm-hmm. The nerves in your your lower extremities. And if you lose that information, then you're going to lose awareness as to what's going on down there, right?
Yeah.
And you can have some crazy things start happening to your feet. Maybe you get some cuts, they appear, and you don't notice. Maybe you get a blister, you don't notice, and it just gets, you know, it starts festering. And they progress, and they progress, and then you have a serious infection on your hands. Which leads us to the next kind of ulcer that maggot therapy is being used for, and these are called pressure ulcers, aka bed sores.
Yeah, these are the ones you get if you're laid up for a while.
Yeah, and pressure ulcers also affect another population that's not bedridden, and that would be diabetics.
Oh.
So little known to me, diabetics and ulcers are have a pretty significant history.
Well, I was familiar with, you know, like some, a lot of times diabetics end up having to go in for amputation later on.
Right. Well, so chronic conditions like diabetes or different vascular diseases, they mess up your circulation. They mess up your blood flow. And we'll get to the maggot diabetic thing in a sec. But let's talk about this pressure ulcer just so we can get you to the maggot therapy. What's happening? We're going to walk you through the steps involved in a pressure ulcer. Starts off, it's a red spot on your skin. You press on it. Maybe it doesn't turn white.
Okay.
So maybe you know something's up, but you probably don't notice it. This is stage one of the pressure ulcer. Next up, you get your open sore going on. And the areas around the sore, they start to get a little angry, you know. The ulcer starts to spread its madness. And next comes the crater. And this is pretty much, you know, you can kind of see a crater in your skin where the tissue has started to break down and go to heck, basically.
Right. And this is when you need to send in the maggots.
Well, eventually pressure ulcers escalate to the point that they become so deep that, of course, they damage surrounding muscle and bone, and they can even spread to tendons and joints. And yes, this is when the maggot therapy might be called in. And before that, a lot of people only had the option of amputation. You know, the infection got so bad that you're faced with, well, we have to amputate that leg, the toe, the foot.
Yeah, because all you have are these big surgical devices, and what you need is a little bitty surgeon or a team of little bitty surgeons, right, to go in there.
In the form of maggots, indeed. Yeah, and it's a pretty significant problem for diabetics once you consider that there are 23 million in the United States, according to the American Diabetes Association, and you're looking at about 70,000 amputations for diabetics occurring every year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Do you like your feet? You like having all your body parts, right?
As we discussed in the prosthetics podcast, I do like my limbs.
Right. So a lot of us, I would imagine, would be interested in avoiding amputation, apart from that one special group of people. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, that crave it. But, yeah, but they're
that actively seek out.
They're sick in the head, though.
Well,
they have problems.
Yes, they do have problems. So anyway, we get these people who are faced with amputation or what? Well, as it turns out, or maggot therapy. And a really important note that I think we should emphasize here, it's not supposed to replace existing therapies. Like, maggots are never going to take the place of surgery. They're never going to take the place of antibiotics.
Yeah, this isn't like some sort of quack technique where it's like we really wish that, you know, Mary would go to an actual doctor, but she's going to that maggot physician. No, it's
not a first line defense.
Right.
And another thing is that when we were researching this podcast, I happened to find out that there is a substance called hydrogels, and they're capable of performing a lot of the functions that maggots can do in maggot therapy.
Hmm.
So, and some of the research seemed to indicate that hydrogels and maggot therapy had about equally effective utility.
Okay.
And you know, so hydrogels are without the maggots, so people very well might opt for those. But let's get into the process. Let's release the maggots, shall we?
Okay. So yeah, so we've got this putrid area that needs clean up. We got some dead tissue that needs to be cleared away from the live tissue.
Yeah. So first step, you got to get the maggots, but don't go gathering up the maggots yourself.
Yeah, you want some farm raised, right?
Don't slather them, you know, willy nilly all over the wound. Although I did read one article that said patients could be taught to administer this treatment themselves. And then when they were done with the maggots, they just toss them in the garbage and be done with it.
Huh. Yeah, they probably would like that, right?
Yeah. I imagine the danger is that you'd probably need to have a strong stomach. And then, of course, you could get the ratio wrong because, like we said, there is a particular ratio you're looking for. And in fact, the general rule of thumb is that you're going to want about 8 maggots per square centimeter of flesh that you want them to consume.
Otherwise, they go a little crazy, right?
Well, they're going to get hungry.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't want to overpopulate. Don't overpopulate. But let's get back to the process. You got to have the maggots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're going to want to have the maggots, and you want to have, again, the right maggots, because there are a lot of different flies in the world, and all of them have larvae. But you're going to, generally the most favored variety is the green blowfly, which is, do you want to take a shot at the scientific name?
I'm going to give it Phoenicia sericata.
Ooh, sounds actually kind of tasty.
It does. Sounds like an Italian dessert.
Yeah, and these are grown, again, in lab, in a lab in a disease-free environment, and they're shipped in sterile containers, probably overnight. Yeah.
All right. So the maggots show up. They're ready for business. Well, mm-hmm. You got to have an open wound of some sort.
Right.
And preferably the wound is clean.
Yeah. Soap and water, wash it out, et cetera. Yeah.
Okay. So a key part of the process here, because a lot of us are not at all cool with maggots just, you know, wandering around our open sores, is a sedative. Often patients who choose to undergo maggot therapy will be administered a sedative, a heavy one.
Yeah. And when you first mentioned this, I was thinking like, oh, these guys are kind of wimps. They just don't want it to feel like they're, you know, little larva crawling on them. But then the whole thing is that they're crawling on air, on very sensitive areas, like inflamed, you know, gross areas that, you know, so it's like pressure on a wound. So of course you don't want to feel that.
Right. They're getting fat off of, you know, eating your necrotic tissue, and it's putting pressure on the wound. And in fact, patients have reported that maggot therapy can be more painful than other kinds of therapy.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you really want to not be aware of it, I would think. So the fact that it's hurting, you know, and you know that there are maggots in there, that would sort of add.
But again, if you were using vultures, the sedation would have to be a lot heavier.
Right. So no vultures. Okay. So you're going to add these live maggots to the wound. And like with leeches, you got to seal them off.
Yeah. You don't want them
running all over the place.
Yeah.
You got to direct them to the task. And so you're going to seal it off, and then you're going to cover the wound with a bandage to keep it in place. And you can also, if you're opposed to having them kind of crawling freely, you can put them in a bio bag or this sealed nylon bag. And of course, necessity is the mother of all invention. So there's a company now, Monarch Labs, that's come out with a special maggot dressing. It has a nice name too.
Yeah. I think there was some of that in the fridge here at work until they... And they threw it away.
Dressing.
Yeah. It's disgusting. It
right.
was so the Paul Newman variety too, so I'm sure it was healthy, but you know.
Oh, right. So this was not salad dressing, but rather wound dressing, and it's called Le Flap. It's $25.
Le Flap?
Le Flap.
Okay.
It's a nice French name.
It does. Yeah.
It brings an element of class to maggot therapy, which, you know, needs a little bit of that. So according to the company, the first pre-manufactured cage dressing available for the U.S. market, that's what it is.
Huh.
The single-piece Le Flap maggot confinement dressing is intended to prevent medicinal maggots from leaving the wound before the treatment is scheduled to end. And, of course, reduce the time and cost necessary to confine them to the wound. So you can look that up over at Monarch Labs if you guys
want. Yeah, you sent a picture of this, right?
I did.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a sticker with a part that peels off, and in the part that peels off, you'd see the wound.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you were painting a design on something, you need like a stencil, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like a maggot stencil.
Yeah. So, yeah. So in a few days' time, you change and replace the bandage and the maggots. Then you flush them out with probably like a saline solution or something.
But wait. You missed the most important part. You missed what's happening in the maggots.
Oh, well, yes.
What they're doing.
Well, they're eating up all that decaying flesh. And
they're clearing the place of bacteria, or at least they're capable of clearing the place of a lot of different species of bacteria.
Yeah, again, because they got these tiny little mouths, you know, going after the little bits there. And the whole time they're oozing fluids, too.
Right. They're turning to some enzymes for help with breaking down the dead tissue further, and they're stimulating cell growth. They're this is pretty cool. They're also excreting an antibacterial agent.
Yeah.
Imagine if we excreted an antibacterial agent.
Yeah.
Just imagine the possibilities.
That would be kind of cool, I guess. But this kind of boils down to what I've read before, like people talking about how maggots are really like they're kind of clean. They're pretty clean organisms, you know. They're
like the pig.
Yeah, they may be in gross situations, but you know, there's nothing wrong. This is also why the maggot. I believe I read something a while back talking about if we were ever to send astronauts to Mars, you know, long space flight. But if you could get them to eat maggots,
astronauts. You want
astronauts to eat maggots, and that would be awesome because maggots, I mean, they're larvae, and all they do is fatten up and get ready for the next stage of their life. So they have a lot of like protein in them. They're like very nutritious. That's why, like, chickens will eat the heck out of maggots, you know?
Yeah.
Their whole, like, farming operations that depend on, like, making sure that, like, the chickens eat the maggots. Or I think there's some, like, tilapia farming, processes out there where, well, like, seriously, it's like, I remember hearing about this where it's like the tilapia, you harvest the tilapia meat, then you let, flies land on the leftovers.
Okay.
Maggots grow, then you get the maggots and you feed the maggots the tilapia, et cetera. So.
That's nice. It's very efficient.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maggots, basically, they just need a little bit of a new campaign, a new PR campaign to revise their image, don't you think?
Yeah, because, like, the treatments are really pretty cheap, right? It's like $100.
Yeah, it can be $100. And so that's a lot less than surgery. And probably your insurance company would be more psyched to, you know, dish out $100 than the cost involved in surgery.
Yeah, put that in the ad campaign. I can like see like the TV ad with like, you know, people walking through a field and they start having a heart to heart about maggots.
So the treatment can last as long as 10 days. And it's important to note that patients may also be taking antibiotics while the maggot therapy is going on. So let's talk about it. You guys may think we're a little crazy. You might not have heard this before. You're thinking, no, I don't buy it. Robert and Allison, they're sort of out there.
Yeah, because we've talked, it's kind of like the whole thing with the hookworm treatment. The hookworm treatment is still considered out there, but.
Well, we only mentioned that in passing in the Barefoot Runner.
Yeah, but it's gotten a lot of coverage elsewhere.
Hellman therapy. You just did a blog post on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are some pretty major, supporters, or at least, people who don't object to maggot therapy. One of them being the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, they came around to it in 2004, the same year that they decided to be okay with leeches.
Yeah. It was a whole banner year.
Yeah, the Leech and Maggot Council really, made some progress that year.
And more recently, November 2009, you had the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in the U.S., revising their billing code guidelines, in an effort to help patients get reimbursed for maggot therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Health Canada, the Canadian Public Health Agency, has gone so far as to classify medical maggots as drugs.
Oh, cool.
So, of course, downsides of therapy, there's side effects. There are, you know, other things that you need to consider when you're considering your overall health.
Yeah.
So maggot therapy, limited research out there. So I was reading an article in the Journal of the Canadian Medical Association, CMAJ, I believe. And the article is mentioning that there are only two randomized clinical trials on maggot therapy that have ever been published.
Okay.
So that's kind of a small amount of information out there. And a lot of these studies that I was encountering, you know, pretty small, little studies done here and there. There's also, of course, the ew factor of maggot therapy.
Yeah, like we touched on, it's like it's hard to get past the fact that it does involve letting little tiny larvae munch on your flesh.
Right.
And you also mentioned that, like, some people are also like concerned, like, oh, what if the maggots escape their enclosure and someone sees one on the floor?
Yeah. But what if you're going to your doctor's office and he's going to give you your maggot therapy? You know, some escape. You're in the waiting room. You're, you know, scanning your copy of people. All of a sudden, you know, a maggot crawls across your foot. Maybe a maggot crawls across Katie Holmes's eye while you're looking at the cover of people. I mean,
I
don't think that would be good.
It would not be good, but cleanliness goes hand in hand with proper medicine. So it's kind of like you also wouldn't want to go in to get your checkup and be like, oh my God, somebody lanced a boil on this table and it's still yucky there. No, because if they would clean it up, you know, so
this is true.
Now, granted, a maggot, unlike boil pus, can actually conceivably crawl out of a room or something. But still, it's, you know.
Good point.
It's still, they can do things to keep it clean. You know?
And in fact, doctors do things to keep their offices clean. And we thank them for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so another downside, maggots. They die easily.
Oh, yeah. They're
not particularly long-lived, so you got to have a good stock of them.
Yeah, and you can't just go up on the roof and, like, throw down a hamburger patty and come back in a couple hours. You know, it's like you need to get them again through actual medicinal maggot providers. So
yeah. And lastly, some species of bacteria may thwart maggots and leave them dead if you send them in to clean an infected wound. And one of the species in question is called Pseudomonas aeruginosa, I believe.
Also sounds kind of tasty. All these, they all sound like something I would get at an Italian restaurant.
I'll have the Pseudomonas aurigonosa, please.
Yeah.
With a Caesar salad.
I think that one is more of a red sauce, and the one we named earlier was white.
And then, of course, maggots, painful. Can be painful when you're having this treatment. So I feel like we should end this podcast on the question of whether you'd do it. Would you do it? Would you undergo maggot therapy?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If it was a situation where people were like, hey, we may have to amputate and, you know, but we want to try maggots first, I would be like, by all means, let's try maggots, you know? I would not necessarily be opposed to the vultures, you know, if that were.
Okay, vultures, no place. Maggot therapy, legit,
but,
out there.
Yeah, it's legit. Vultures is just me talking about it. But no, I would definitely give the maggot option a go if it were something, you know, if it were recommended to me by my doctor. Yeah.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
I would like to ask producer Matt. He's not allowed to talk.
No, he's not.
We can't see him either. I wonder if producer Matt would do it. Would you?
Yes.
Yeah, Matt would do it. Yeah.
Matt has answered in the affirmative. So all three of us would do it if we were presented with the right situation. Would you, though? So write in and tell us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you think about maggot therapy.
Or just maggots in general, you know?
Yeah. Tell us your impressions of maggots.
Well, one of the things for me, like we talked about leeches in another podcast we recorded today, and then we talked about maggots. And neither of these have really, like, gross me out because they seem very task-based. There are definite things they're out there achieving. Like that maggot, he's going to eat until he turns into a fly, and more power to him. That leech wants to drink blood and, you know, carry on. But I've always been really sickened out by garden slugs because I'm like, what is this for? What is it doing? Unless it's like feeding off of just my utter revulsion at its like fat sliminess.
I think that's an unfair characterization of the garden slug.
Yeah, well, I challenge you or anybody to tell me what good they're doing.
All right, so challenge is out. Send us an email, sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com. Maggots, slugs, we'd love to hear from you. And we got a little listener mail we'd like to share with you.
Oh, cool.
Today we have Ryan, and he wrote in to talk to us about the podcast. He said, hey, I'm 14 and just got back from a one-year trip to Japan. I really like the podcast and it helped a lot on the plane ride back. I bet it did. That's one long podcast. That's one long plane ride.
Yeah.
I wonder how many episodes of Stuff from the Science Lab you listen to. That could be
a lot. All of them.
So Ryan said, I listened to your smelling podcast and the smell-o-vision reminded me of something I saw in a Japanese museum. There was a computer that allowed you to play a bunch of videos, mostly cooking related, and smells would come out of the computer related to what you're watching. Have you guys heard of this?
I think I have heard of this. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I wonder what kind of smells.
Well, you're very limited in what you can watch. Like, you know, even there are some great things out there. I wouldn't necessarily want to watch, say, The Seven Samurai, you know, in smell-o-vision or pretty much any film that I like. I can't think of one that would smell really good. I don't know. Amelie might smell good.
Oh, Amelie. That would definitely smell good.
Yeah.
She's so cute.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not just her, but like, you know, they're in a cafe. It's Paris. I don't know.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. There's French perfume. There's flowers wafting through the air. There's the smell of a nice, you know, French roast.
Yeah.
That's a good smelling
Now, speaking
movie.
Of perfume, I don't know about the movie perfume. Like, the scenes for the actual perfume probably smell really awesome,
no
but not
way.
So much the Paris gutters, you know.
No. Hey, and on a more serious note, we also heard from Joshua, and Joshua is a PhD candidate. And he wrote in to talk to us about our recent Evolution in Action podcast, and he wanted to talk to us about something that I said, actually. I was talking a little bit about antibiotics and just my parental fear, and Joshua and Allison mentioned that as a parent, it was troubling to give her child antibiotics because she feared that her child might evolve resistance to the antibiotic. And actually, that was a misstatement. So thank you, Josh, for correcting me. I just wanted to point out that her child wouldn't evolve resistance to the antibiotic because first, the target of the antibiotic is, of course, the bacterial population living inside the child, not the child itself. Second, and more important, evolution can't happen within a single individual. The idea that an individual can change its attributes over its lifetime to suit a set of environmental circumstances with blah, blah, blah. So Josh had a lot to say, interesting stuff to say. And I really appreciate that correction because it's an important distinction to make. I mean, it's not my daughter evolving resistance. It's, you know, the bacteria population in her, which, you know, decided it didn't like a particular antibiotic. And it scared the heck out of me as a parent. But there are options out there. And it's an important distinction to make, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, let us know when we slip up. And we'll read the corrections in the air. Yeah, don't just talk about us in the alley or at work and be like, that Allison and Robert, you should have heard what they said the other day. You know, let us know. We'll clear the air.
Yeah, we're happy to do so. I think that about wraps it up. Thanks for listening to us. And if you want to hang out on Facebook or Twitter, we're there too.
Yeah, on Facebook, we're Stuff in the Science Lab. And on Twitter, we are Lab Stuff.
All right, rock on. Thanks for listening.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.